Brisbane, Australia. This is episode 35 of The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40k experience. I'm Luke, and today we have Liam.
Hey, hey.
Jordan.
Hey, guys. How are we doing?
And our special guest today, Matt Morozzoli. How are you, Matt?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks for joining us. So for those who didn't know, Matt actually won the Australian ITC circuit last year, which secured him his ticket to LVO as well as flights and accommodation all paid for thanks to Frontline Gaming.
But anyone can do that. That's pretty easy. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on. Sorry, I totally interrupted.
Yes. He's also a member of the ETC team, along with Liam, and these two will both be heading to Serbia in a couple of weeks to compete round one against Italy. So, the first half, we will talk about the WinterCon format and also Matt's unique list and how it functions. So, this list he's been playing quite often, slight variants, but he'll go through the details of his Chaos list. We'll then continue on to discuss both in detail Matt and Liam's games over the two-day tournament, and finally end with their showdown in the final round, which was a very, very exciting game. So, be sure to head over to the Warzone Gaming Twitch stream to check out the games. They're very, very highly skilled, highly technical, very entertaining to watch. And also, there's a lot of information to learn there if you're interested in learning a bit more on competitive 40K. So, recently, we just had WinterCon here, and it was an 85 or 84 player tournament. Who was the host, Liam? Was it Andrew?
So, we had Andrew Garrard. Andrew Garrard is one of the New South Wales boys. He plays for Warzone Wargaming, which is a pretty big gaming group. And he was hosting the event in Canberra because Canberra has a really awesome convention center that is awesome for hosting events. And as we sort of segue into, it's the same place they hold CanCon. It's a massive series of halls. The big one they had the 40K event in comfortably fit 82 40K players. They also had like a bolt action event and another event and a couple of stalls and had room to spare. It's a huge place.
Yeah, that's insane. So, as well, we're going to get these guys to go over their WinterCon lists. The event was actually streamed, so I think you can find it on the Warzone Gaming Twitch channel.
I think you can, yeah.
Yes. You can also look up the lists and the player placings on the BCP app for WinterCon 2019 40K ITC tournament. And you'll see, spoiler alert, Matt Morozzoli actually won the tournament, but he actually tied first. He tied first with Chris Wright, who ran Imperium, and Kieran Howard, who ran Chaos. And our very own Liam. Liam, where'd you come, man?
I came fourth, and I came fourth because Matt Morozzoli pumped me right at the end. He beat me good, beat me fair and square, and I deserve to come fourth.
And that's on stream if you want to watch that. It's actually a pretty good game. Matt made a 6-point swing at the end, which was insane.
Oh, nah. So it was, I guess, a 6-point swing, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later, but yeah. Matt deserved to win that game, honestly. Like, there was, the game was going in that direction from the beginning. I don't think it really swung at the end. I think it was fair.
Yeah. So now we're going to actually get these guys talking about their lists and talking about their most favorite games of the tournament. And then they'll finally talk about their last round together on the top table on stream.
Yeah, and I think one of the awesome things about an event the size of something like WinterCon is that even going into the final round, you could play any number of people. Because as we were saying before we started recording, when you've got 82 players and you're doing win-loss as the primary matchup tool, you're going to get at the end of the event, you know, a couple of people who've gone 5-0, but going into the final round, I think you had, Matt, was it 6 or 7 people on four wins?
It's only 5, man. There were 5 on 4 wins and 1 on 3 in the draw that played up in the Kieran.
All right, fair enough. So, Matt, do you want to sort of start us off? Because you won the event. People want to hear about the winning list, so hit us.
Oh, hold on. First,
sure. I took it
before you guys do start. Just give us a breakdown on the WinterCon format, like what you know, for all the listeners, people that are listening.
Yeah, so WinterCon was an ITC tournament, as a lot of tournaments are these days. It was using Best Coast Pairings as its matchup tool. How the day worked was the tournament was a 2,000-point tournament, and the tournament was run on... So the first round was random, so you played just sort of based luck of the draw. And after that, every win was worth 2 round points, draws were worth one, and losses were worth none. And every round you played people who had the same number of round points as you. So after round one, all the winners play each other, and then after round two, all the people on two wins, and so on and so forth. Round points at the end of the event were the ultimate decider of where you placed. So Matt, who, again, spoiler alert, won the event, he had 10 round points because he won all five of his games. And so did the people who came, everyone who came first, second, third, ended up on our 5 wins. That was pretty much how the event was run.
Nice. So now just give us a breakdown on your list. We'll probably start with you, Matt.
Sure. So both Liam and I actually took our ATC Team Australia list. So these lists we've been working on for 6 months, 9 months, I'm not sure exactly how long, but quite a long time. And they're not really built for the ITC format, but we sort of thought it'd be good to give them a good run in a competitive format regardless.
Absolutely, so
I'm playing a Chaos list. I've got access to all things Chaos, which is lovely. I've got my choice of a bunch of books. But basically what I settled on was a list that revolves around lesser demons and characters. So I've got a Chaos Undivided Demon Battalion with the Big Corn Axe Prince, a Poxbringer, two Swords of 20 Bloodletters with Pythons and Instruments, a squad of 27 Plague Bearers with an instrument as well. I've got a second Demon Battalion that's got the Changecaster with the Staff of Change for the long-range smite, 20 Pink Horrors, 10 Brimstone Horrors, and then a second unit of 20 Plague Bearers. And I've got a Thousand Suns Battalion as well with Ahriman and Abyss, two Demon Princes, one of which is the Warlord, both with Talons and Wings, two Swords of 10 Cultists, and 20 Zangors. So pretty much just an heap of bodies with a bunch of characters that hide in around the dam of wounds and deep striking shenanigans and bits and pieces. Like I said, it's not sort of super, super suitable for the ITC format. It does give up a lot of points for certain secondaries, but obviously got the job done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure, bloody did.
It's a unique list because normally when we see Plague Bearers in front of, you know, the T-Suns, it's like 90 Plague Bearers.
Don't need that many, man. I've never needed 90.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, what sort of kept you off? Did you just keep like hoarding them with bloodletters or something else to shoot?
It really depends. This army is really cool because it has a lot of flexibility and a lot of tools. So the bloodletters always go in deep strike. The pink horrors 99% of the time go in deep strike as well. You've then got the second unit of plague bearers. Now in ITC, I was often making an engineer's unit, and I was the deep strike and the down later in the game. On the off chance, the brimstones would drop and the second engineer unit died. Or they'd just sit behind a wall in a ruin and screen off part of the board. With a lot of the ITC-style magic boxes, you can just hide that unit for the whole game, not give up any points for it, just grab an objective and sit there and be essentially, you know, immovable. I've never needed any more than that, honestly, between playing smart and hiding your models in ruins when you need to and running bloodletters at your opponent or using the dark matter crystal on the Zangors to put them out in front of the army and making them minus one being plus one involved. I've never really needed any more than 50.
Yeah, right. Because it is kind of like a constant pressure. Like there's always something deep striking and hitting that you got to prepare for, I guess. So, yeah.
I'm looking at the list now, and yeah, you can see two bloodletter bombs and you got your Zangor bombs. So it's like it's three turns of being painful.
What's sort of unique about it? It's very similar to Genestealer Cult in that you can go first turn if you Dark Matter Crystal. You can go obviously second and third turn with the bloodletter drops. But then if you don't use the Zangors early, which in a lot of games, they sort of sit in the back of the screening for deep strikes of my opponents, you can then Dark Matter Crystal them up on turn 4 or turn 5, and the threat never really goes away. But some armies have to screen the whole game.
Yeah, and you just physically can't do that when it comes later in the game.
Absolutely, that's it. Once the Bloodletters get in and kill a bunch of your screens, often it'll just let the Zangors go in and take control of the board, hold a couple of objectives. against Liam and against lots of my other opponents, I was just able to deep strike units in, charge really deep, end up scoring the bonus point, basically because my opponent couldn't screen out far enough.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
All right, Liam, do you want to... I'm pretty sure we all know it, but do you want to go over your list again?
Oh, look, I'm a broken record at this point. I've been playing a very similar Orc army for a long time. I tried every other variant under the sun because, as Matt said, you know, for ETC, we had pretty much freedom to put in as much practice as we needed. After a lot of time and a lot of playtesting, I settled on my Orc army with 20 Mega Knobs, the 15 Tank Busters, 15 Looters, 3 Shock Attack Guns, and 90 Gretchen. Something I've spoken about a number of times on this podcast. It has served me very, very faithfully, but something I have said before, it is not built for ITC. It's not built for ITC because Mega Knobs are terrible for the Gangbusters secondary, which is very frustrating. The army has a lot of characters, which are very fragile, and it also gives up Reaper without really even trying to. So it's very easy to get secondaries from without even killing half the army, which is quite unfortunate. That being said, it served me really well. And, you know, as Matt mentioned, it was sort of good for a couple of the ETC players. We had four of us there at the event, which was awesome. It was kind of good for us to sort of put our armies on the table and play a tournament against, especially for me anyway, I played two really good games over the course of a five-round tournament. And my other games were against really awesome opponents that let me practice things that I'm going to need at ETC. So all in all, I think it was a good practice exercise.
Yeah. So, Matt, now we'll move into getting you guys talking about your games. That's what everyone's pretty much here for. So we'll start with you, Matt. What round and what game are you going to start with?
Yeah, so I'll skip over round one and two. So round one, I played a gentleman who hasn't played the game in 6 years. So I sort of coached him through a lot of that. You know, while it's great to, you know, give someone a hand, the games are never really that interesting. And game two, I played Leek up in New South Wales, and my list just sort of had his list number, so there wasn't really much to talk about there. Mm-hmm. But game three and game four definitely got interesting. I'll actually start with game four. I think game three is a bit more of an interesting story. But game four, I played a Dark Eldar army to Jeremy Wales. Now, what's interesting about this, it probably isn't the most competitive and tight game. I got up by about 10 points at the end. This was actually Jeremy's first tournament. So he's been playing out with a couple of mates in his shed 2.5 hours from Canberra in the middle of nowhere in rural New South Wales. And he came out, and I said, well it wasn't the tightest game of the weekend, he actually gave me a very good game. He sort of brought some really interesting ways of looking at a few different units from the Dark Eldar army that I haven't seen before. He used had a big witch blob, very, very similar to a lot of the units that Sean Naden has in the US runs. And I've always sort of scratched my head looking at them, wondering, you know, how to make them work. And he definitely sort of showed me a few cool tricks with them. Obviously, with a bit more practice, he'll probably get a lot better. But that army just sort of came in, he had a shooting gallery, and my plague bearers managed to take the middle of the board and tie some units up. And between smites and, you know, two blood level bombs getting the charge and everything, I sort of took the whole board off him.
Mm-hmm.
Very common when I play the Dark Eldar armies that have the Grotesques and the Talos. I think people need to look at any army that has Ahriman and some Demon Princes that can know Doombolt. And if you have the threat of Doombolt on the other side of the table, too, you have to deep-strike the Grotesques. Otherwise, they sit on the other side of the board, moving 3 inches a turn, never really able to take any sort of a meaningful board pressure. That's probably a good little tip if you're a Dark Eldar player playing against Chaos. But yeah, that one I ran out about 10 points ahead. It wasn't the most entertaining game, but I thought he really deserved a shout out for becoming fifth in his first ever event after just playing with a couple of mates in his garage.
Well, shit, he did pretty well coming up against Australia's top dog.
Yeah, no, it wasn't absolutely a complete pushover. He did definitely, you know, make me think about a couple of things. Do you want me to do my second one now, or are you sort of going back and forth with Liam, or do you want me to pull out my game three story now?
We'll let Liam have one in, and then we'll get to the good stuff, right?
This is the victory that I get to have now. We talk about your victory later. So,
all right, Liam, you're on the clock. Let's go.
Well, I'm going to tap it over you before I finish. Anyway, so I'm going to talk about probably round two and round four for me. Round two was a game that I won very decisively, but the reason I want to talk about it was playing against a list archetype that I've never versed before. So round two, I played Luke Greco. G-R-E-C-O was his last name for you looking up lists, Jordan. He was playing Necrons. Now, I've played against our local friend Brian, who's played Necrons quite a lot. But Luke was playing an army that consists of three Doomsday Arcs, three Doom Scythes, a big unit of Tesla Tombblades, and a number of little things here and there. The reason why this was very interesting for me was that a lot of armies going to ETC, a lot of, or pretty much, to be honest, 100% of the Necron armies in attendance at ETC are this format. They've all gone for three Doom Scythes, three Doomsday Arcs, and I presume they're using the stratagem that's relevant there, where it's quite a cool stratagem, actually. You pick a point within 24 of all three of the Doom Scythes, and then on a 4-up, you take 3d3 more wounds, so it can just sort of give something instantly. I've never versed this before, so I was a bit afraid of it initially, but it's a little bit easy to play around, and 3d3 mortal wounds, it sounds scarier than it is, especially for units like Orcs where you've got models to spare. So for example, he tried to do that stratagem on my tank busters, and it went off and it just killed my bomb squigs, didn't kill anything else, and then my tank busters turned around and killed, to be honest, the majority of his army, killed all three of the Doomsday, the Doom Scythes. And they teleported across and finished off two Doomsday Arcs. I ended up winning that game 40-12, but it sort of gave me a bit of an insight to how somebody who knows how to play Necrons, how that army goes when piloted by a general who knows how to use it. Because I was really uncertain how it would actually go.
So what did he hit with the 3d3 mortal wounds? He didn't go for your shock attack gun.
Well, the thing, it's neg one against characters, so it's on a 4-up. But yeah, it only goes off on a 5-up. Now, because I was a bit afraid that he would go for the shock attack guns, I deployed pretty much all of my units 6 inches apart. We played Hammer and Anvil. So I deployed all my units 6 inches apart so that if he was going to do the strat, it would only affect a single unit. It would only affect one or two units, and those two units would be Gretchen. So I gave him a few bad choices, and the one he ended up taking, to be honest, I still think was the right choice, was for him to go for a unit of Gretchen and my tank busters. But again, it's not really that effective, especially when you've got the spare wounds, so to speak, bomb squeaks. Yeah. The other thing that Luke did that was, he sort of took a little bit of bait, so to speak, is I deployed, so he, this was mission two, and in mission two, four, and six of the ITC format, you are deploying the same way you do for ETC, and that's you deploy your whole army, and then the person who puts down their army first decides if they want to go first or second. So I put a juicy blob of 30 Gretchen at the front of my deployment zone, or a couple inches back, to kind of encourage him to move his Tomb Blades up, because he wanted to shoot the Tomb Blades and get an early point, get a Butcher's Bill, and get Killmore. But because he did so, he moved into charge range from the Meganobs that were hiding behind a ruin, because they can move advance and charge. So in so doing, he kind of took that bait and lost his Tomb Blades turn one, which was quite bad for him, because after that, he didn't really have the volume firepower needed to fight my army.
Yeah, it's pretty funny that Necron stratagem, like, if you haven't versed it before and you get hit by it, you're like, oh, fuck, I might be in trouble here. But once you face it, you pretty much know the deal, and you know what to do.
Yeah, well, the thing is that, you know, 3d3 mortal wounds it's actually terrifying, but it's six mortal wounds. That's how I look at it. It's what you should do. You should do six mortal wounds. So that's, you know, it might kill a scout squad if it gets you, but it also will, like, you know, kill half a rhino. And I'm actually not really sure if killing half a rhino is really worth sacrificing the big gun from three Doomsday Arcs, because they can't shoot if they do the strat. So it's a bit, yeah. I don't know, I'm kind of on the fence about it, to be honest.
The play with it is, a lot of people, like, if you're versing like a character blob army and they stuff up and they put everything too close, you, like, sure, it's on a 5-up, but if they're all on a blob, it's, you're going to kill one or two characters depending on how many there, but it's
yeah,
definitely,
that's fair.
So yeah, your custodes armies, like your, I don't know, Caladius Grav tanks or something like that, with Trajan and the banner all sitting there, I mean, it'd hurt them.
And I guess if you do that, you're sort of hoping to kill one of those important characters, and then the army kind of falls apart a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, all you need is one, but it definitely hurts. I've seen it. I've seen it work miracles. I've seen someone roll against three characters, all fives, kill, and they're like, well, that's game.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I just think with a lot of abilities like that, and, you know, the Vindicator stratagem is the same, the Zoanthrope stratagem is the same, it kind of is predicated on you bunching up. And
yeah, exactly.
In this edition, you can, there's not really much excuse for you to do, if you know it's coming, just don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a gotcha moment, and once it's done, it's done.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah.
All Matt, right. We'll sort of segue a little bit into the second game you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, cool. So I'll talk about game three against Justin Locke, who was playing a combined guard and knight's army. Now, I'll preface this by saying when I was a little bit younger, when I was sort of learning competitive 40K, I was spent a lot of time playing with Josh Diffy, who probably most people will know in Australia. And this is sort of something, this attitude that I sort of had to adopt in this game is something I learned from Josh about 5 or 6 years ago. So quite a long while back. But this will all sort of make sense once I get into the story a bit more. But essentially what happened is he ran his knights at me. I sort of smited one of them out. He had a castellan, a gallant, and a crusader. So I knocked the gallant over pretty quickly. In return, his castellan took a shield-breaking missile and killed my herald of Sinesh, so I couldn't use the gem anymore. I dropped the unit of bloodletters in, sort of half-killed the castellan. I was sort of, the rest of my army was working on the rest of his army, sort of just killing guardsmen, you know, doing what demons do. And then it got to turn three. And I went and I sort of marked out where the castellan was. I had 11 wounds left. Put some dice out for my second unit of bloodletters, pulled the models out on the table. Didn't actually set them up. I went into my psychic phase and I cast the power without setting the models up. So, you know, fair play is fair play. I made that mistake. I said to him, like, look, I've just cast Gaze of Fate. You might have set them up. He says, yeah, no, you can't do that. And I just said to him, this is sort of what I learned from Josh is the, are you sure you want to do that? Because once you make that decision, once you choose, like I said, he knew where they were going. I pulled the models out to a file, sort of. Everyone was pretty clear on what was happening. And I said, I'm like, are you sure you want to do that? And he said, yes. And I'm like, if that's how you want to play the game, that's fine. But I'm very good at that sort of game and you better play perfectly. And that's what he wanted to do. So I said, okay. I pulled my unit off, you know, copped the Reaper point that I lost for that, copped the Killmore that I lost for that turn. So I actually went down quite a few points in that turn because my whole sort of plan crumbled and I ended up being, I think, 4 or 5 points down at this stage. Because firstly, I was banging killing the castellan, and I'd sort of planned my turn around killing the castellan. So that was pretty tough. But then, sort of, what happened here is sort of the lesson you've got to learn is if you're by his own admission, a more up and coming player, playing someone again by his own admission who's quite a bit more experienced than he was, you sort of have to pick your battles. Because he made quite a few movement mistakes in the turns that followed. He got spoiler unit back from my Given the Plague Bearers. He set his whole army up to shoot it. And he looked at me and I'm just like, well, I'm not going to let you have it. And he sort of said, yeah, fair enough. I made a few more mistakes. He forgot to move the unit that he, you know, had to go back in order to move, and couldn't make an objective. A few other bits of news. And perhaps the most poetic way to end the game, I actually ended up getting through sort of all of his midfield, and I held 3 of the 4 objectives. I had a Demon Prince on the fourth one. And with his last move of the game, I was up by a single point at this turn. So it was 26-25. If he held an objective, he was going to draw the game. He advances a unit of guardsmen up onto the objective. He then charges my Demon Prince on the same objective with a Commissar. Doesn't make base contact with me. And the Demon Prince proceeds to heroically intervene into the 5 guardsmen and kill them.
Oh, no.
And take his obsession off the objective and pull out the win by a single point because he just didn't base the model. So we had a good chat about it after the game. And he apologized. I think he felt a bit bad about it. But, you know, he sort of said to me, he's like, look, you know, well, next time we play, you can do the same thing to me. And I'm like, mate, I don't want to do the same thing to you. I just want to have a game where everyone's chill. It's just, it was a very, I think it was a good lesson for him to learn that you don't have to be, you know, I won't say it's dirty because you are well within your right to do that sort of thing. But if you do it, you sort of have to be prepared to be switched on and ready to go for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
He was a very, very good guy about it.
You've got to be prepared that you're going to likely get the same treatment back in return.
Absolutely. I don't like to play that way, but if your opponent wants to, you sort of get forced to do it. If you know they're going to take every little thing they're going to get, you've sort of got to do the same thing back. But like I said, there was no hard feelings. I'm happily, happily playing again. I just thought it was quite an interesting story. It was a very intense way to end the first day.
Well, it's kind of like, poetic justice, as you said. I mean, players well within their rights to do that. But I generally find personally that the most exciting and even competitive games that I've ever played have always been the ones where everyone plays exactly by intention and they just state what they're doing. And if everybody knows what they're doing, it's kind of like, if I can beat you at your best, like, intention, then that's a like more rewarding than beating you by you making a silly mistake when I knew what you were going to do anyway, but you just didn't do it by the book, so to speak.
Yeah.
But that's just my personal 100%. Thing.
Well, look, in game two, immediately prior to that, my opponent actually forgot to deep strike me with a silence. And we'd gone almost a full turn before he noticed. And I said, look, just put them in the back corner of the board. They're not dead. You just have them, you know, have them alive on that objective in the corner. And we just moved on from that point and it was all good. But yeah, look, you're right. It's you've really just got to sort of adapt to your opponent. If that's the sort of the game they want to play, if they think that's, you know, the best game to be playing, it's all good. You just have to be prepared to put your foot down when they make mistakes as well.
Yeah, I mean, I get intimidated by that because, like, imagine if you did that and you're like, oh, fuck, now it's on me. And I think maybe it sounds like a little bit of that happened where... Yeah, he put you on your toes, and then you're like, all right, I'll put it right back. And he went, oh, shit, and kind of, you know.
I think he definitely realized his mistake almost immediately.
Yeah, but that's good. I mean, it didn't lead to arguments. Like you said, he was still a good guy. Everything went pretty cleanly, but...
That's it, yeah. No, he was... Look, I was worried it was going to get a bit salty as we finished off, but no, we shook hands, and we had a good chat about it, and I sort of said, look, these are the times where I think it's appropriate. These are the times where I don't think it's appropriate. And he sort of tended to agree with me.
That's really good. That's really good.
Yeah,
it's a good resolution for what could have been a much worse story come out of that game.
Yeah, the 1-point win. Oof.
Yeah, very tight.
All right. So, Liam, hit us with your round two, or your second game.
So I actually want to talk about my fourth round, the round right before I played Matt at the end. I played Mark Deal in this game. And this game, a little bit more positive, not going to lie, than Matt's story. We were out to dinner. So this is a two-day event. Round four was the first game of the Sunday. On the Saturday night, we all went out for a few beers and some burgers. And Mark's actually sitting next to me when we're having burgers. And I've never met Mark before. And Mark just randomly says, I'm telling a story to the guys at the table, and Mark just randomly sort of leans in close to me and goes, hey, do you do that podcast? Do you do a podcast? And I was like, yeah, we do. We're like, I'm on the Normal Blokes, and I basically go on there and talk nothing but crap. And then Mark goes, man, I've just started listening. I've listened to most of the episodes now. And I was like, I was really chuffed by that because it's the first time that's ever happened to me, for one. And then what was even more of a small world was I ended up getting matched to him on the first round of day two. So round four, Mark's playing a custodian army.
I hope you're on your best behavior, Liam.
I was on my best behavior. And just like Matt said, I have this little spiel I say at the start of my games, especially for new games. I'm sort of like, look, I think we should play this game to intent. If you tell me you're going to do something and then you forget to do it later, you can always go back and do it. You just tell me exactly how far away your units are, like when you're doing pre-measuring, and I'll always play to that, just so it's transparent. We spent, you know, time clarifying the terrain, and everything was well and good. Unfortunately for Mark, the one thing that he did not take the time to clarify was his own goddamn codex. So what happened was Mark was playing a custodian army that was three units of bikers, 4-3-3, three of the Calidus grav tanks, a biker boss, Trajan Valoris, and the Negwanda hit banner. Now, what he did was he got first turn, and he moved his army up and sort of made a bit of a screen with his bikers. And he made the screen sort of around his Calidus grad tanks that were all in a ruin. And I was looking at this and I was like, I was a bit confused by this because he actually moved off one of his objectives, which I thought was very bizarre. Now, my turn one, I can see all three Calidus grab tanks. So I say to myself, look, there's nothing really for me to lose. I'm going to de-jump my tank buses across the table and we're going to see what happens. Mark is, he's keeping completely silent. He's not saying anything. And I'm a bit like, I can see he's a little bit tense. So I put all my tank busters on my his objective, which was what I needed to get the bonus as well. And then I go, okay, they're now deep strike. They've deep struck there. Then Mark looks me dead in the eyes and goes, I'm going to intercept you with my bikers.
Oh, I know where this is going.
And I know the custody book very, very well. So I sort of go, man, I'm very, very sure, very, very sure that that stratagem is infantry only. And he's like, no, it's not. And he gets out his codex because he's got it with him and he's checking. And he's not checking to sort of, you know, argue with me. He's checking because he's genuinely curious. He opens up his codex, he reads the stratagem, and it's infantry only. And he, like, the light just drains from Mark's eyes. I literally wanted to give him a hug. Because what he's done is he's moved off an objective, but made sure his bikers were within 12 of all points of that objective, specifically with the intent of baiting my tank busters. Like, that was literally his only goal with this game. He was like, if I kill the tank busters, I think I'll be right. And the tank busters ended up killing the majority of his tanks, and then everything else just went terrible. And we actually called that game turn three. We talked out the rest of the game. And it was the first time I've ever gotten 42 out of 42 in an ITC tournament game. But big shout out to Mark because he was an absolute trooper about it. And I feel like I made a friend in Canberra. He was a good guy.
Oh, man. The old... Oh, yeah. I can't overwatch this anymore. Or I can't use this anymore.
I'll be, because like I could tell just when he was moving his models, I could tell he was planning something, and for the life of me, I couldn't work out what it was, and I just assumed I was wrong. I assumed that I'm missing something, and when he told me what he was planning on doing, I just kind of like, oh, I felt so bad for him. He had such a good plan.
As soon as you said he moved the bikers in front of the tanks, I was like, oh, I think I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Well, unlucky, Mark. I guess you've learned for next time. But no, hope you had a good game. It sounds like it was pretty rough when those tank buses hit, right? How many tanks did you take out?
So I killed two and a half of the Calidus grab tanks. So like, which, you know, the final Calidus didn't really do too much. What I really liked about that game, though, apart from the result, I do admit, was that pre-game, Mark and I think we really did like what is the exemplar of a tournament game. We really got to the table, and straight off the bat, Mark was like, you know, bantering with me and having a bit of a laugh. And then he goes, look, let's talk about the table. He clarified everything. He asked me, like, you know, do you know what custodies do? Do you want me to talk through, like, the tricks my army has? Because, he didn't want to have any gotcha moments at all. Mm. Unfortunately, I think he did want to intercept me with his bikes. But other than that, he didn't really have any gotchas. But he was willing to talk through it all, which I think was an incredibly gentlemanly thing to do and is an awesome idea for tournaments if you want to play a game that's completely by the book.
Yeah, okay. Those forward statements generally set the precedent for the rest of the game.
The only other thing I will say about my my game against Mark, and I think this goes to show how much of a gentleman he really is after he worked out that the stratagem was infantry only, not only did he apologize to me, so he hadn't done anything to me at all, but he apologized because he was genuinely mortified that he'd gotten a rule wrong. But he also realized that he owed it to his opponents from previous games to go and talk to them and apologize to them. And he actually did that pretty much straight away. He was genuinely going out of his way to be not just a good sport, but, you know, be true to all of his opponents and be honest with them. Honestly, yeah, if we had more marks at tournaments, things would be really good.
Yep.
I've never met a bad Mark, but that anyway, moving on.
What?
So now for the tasty stuff, all right? So this is last round.
Oh, I've clocked out here. I can't talk.
Yeah, so Liam has clocked out. And in the other corner, we have Mr. Operative Requisition Sanctioned, Morozoli, summoned when people need him. For 85 CP points. Yeah, and 2 CP.
2 CP and $600.
Yep.
The only true mercenary for Australian 40K.
So
Australian's best pro 40K player.
So these two are both ETC players, both well-renowned players, both one's a good player.
No,
Liam's not a good player. Let's be nice.
So we have Orcs versus Demons. Now, who had first turn, and how about we do this in turn order? You guys talk it through.
We should probably go from before the first turn. Actually, I think we should talk about the table
because the deployment and table mattered.
Oh, okay. This is getting intense. All right. Hold on. All right. I'm ready.
Matt, you take it away. You start.
I'll let you go. Just for reference, before we even started, I let Liam shake his hand and I say congrats on the win because I actually didn't think I'd take it. So I looked like a right cocky douchebag when I won that game.
And look, for those of you who know Matt, Matt's never been cocky before. He's always a very humble dude.
Absolutely. And
he really showed that after the game. No, so
look, if we were going for double sum, we'd be cock and clock, right?
Look, you're now top of the clock, put it that way. Anyway, I'm top of the clock. Okay, before this entire podcast just becomes meme shitposting, I'll just move into actually talking about something of substance. So basically, round five, we're on the stream table, me versus Matt. The reason why I talk about the stream table was, you know, as Matt and I were talking about the game beforehand, he actually said to me, I think your list has my number, was I think the exact words that you used, Matt. And the reasons for that are, you know, both he and I know each other's armies fairly well, because again, we're both on the ETC team and I've seen Matt's army 100 times. I know Matt's looked at my Orc army. He hasn't played it before, but he's looked at my Orc army quite a few times. Now, looking at this matchup, Matt's army, as he's explained before, it really works by dropping bombs and cornering your opponent, and it can do that in a variety of turns timings. Now, the reason why I think my army, on paper anyway, counters that quite well is that I've got a lot of long-range shooting options and two-up armor save countercharge melee unit sit behind Gretchen. And the reason why that matters is that over time, I think I can really whittle Matt's army down and shoot most of it to death. But the stream table, and you can go watch this on Twitch, again, Overwatch Wargaming, the stream table was an extremely dense table. Matt, I think for you and I think it's fair to say that table, I think personally it was denser than even what you'd classify as a dense table in the ETC form.
I reckon for my army, because my army is literally just infantry and characters, I think it is. You can't really hire a lot of bigger things on that table. Like the ruin, the shield generator thing that I played around for a lot of the game, you wouldn't have fit a tank behind.
No, but definitely
for infantry armies like ours, it was probably just as dense, if not denser, than the 1 out of 8 super dense terrain that there is at ETC.
Yeah. And what that really meant for our game was, you know, it is fast forwarding a bit. We can talk through it step by step. What it really meant was that even from turn one, my looters didn't get to impact the game as much as I need them to do. But also more importantly was I, a lot of the time, couldn't really interact with his backfield units that were sitting on objectives. So I won the roll off for picking side. And then because it's mission 5, Matt and I had to alternate deploying units. Matt won the roll off to go first. I think you had the +1 anyway, Matt. What did you do in your first turn? Because for me anyway, I think the first turn, I don't think it decided the game, but it influenced the rest of the game substantially.
Yeah, well, I think it was the momentum swing with me being able to box you in on the first turn and then continue to do that for sort of the 2 subsequent turns. really limited your ability to interact with the plague bearers, especially.
Yeah.
So on my first turn, do you want to describe your deployment first? That actually might matter.
Yeah, sure.
A little bit as well, because you obviously you sort of knew what was coming to an extent if you went second.
Yeah, I definitely did. But so as we said, you know, Matt's army has quite a lot of bombs. So I tried to prepare for, you know, the things coming in from Deep Strike by screening out with my Gretchen. But I think you can agree, Matt, that I bunched up the Gretchen a bit too tightly. I didn't spread out as much as I could have. And that meant that what Matt did in his first turn was way more effective than I think it should have been.
Yeah, so look, my first turn was relatively relatively quick in terms of moving and just moving a couple of units around the board. All I really did was I moved a couple of psychers up in range to try and throw some targeted smites at the looters. One of them was one of them failed, and the other one was actually ended up being out of range and just did a couple of wounds to one of the Meganob units. The big play was the Zangor Dark Matter Crystal turn one. So they went up, they formed a line 9 away from all of Liam's grots. They got plus one to hit, they got Prescience, they got, Weaver of Fates, Glamour of Zension, minus one to hit, 4+ invuln, hitting on twos, made their charge and fought twice and proceeded to kill, I think it was 40 grots on the first turn.
Certainly did.
Including, quite notably, one of his two engineer units was probably the very notable win there. I was knocking one of those out in the first turn. And then I piled in so that I was, essentially, 9 or 10 inches off the back of Liam's deployment zone, which sort of forced him to stay really, really deep, in his own deployment zone. And then spent, I suppose Liam will sort of talk through his turn one, but the play there was just to go as deep as I possibly could and take up as much of that space and really get in there and, put pressure on Liam's home objective from the first turn, which I think works quite well.
Yeah, it worked extremely well because one thing that my army has always functioned well at is countercharge, because an army, even like Matt's, in the first turns of some games, especially with the plague bearers and the characters, he can move up and take the mid board and sort of start smiting you and whatnot. A lot of armies function similarly. And the reason why my army can counter those quite well is that the megas, when they move in advance or even one of them de jumps, they can sort of counter into the middle of the table very quickly. But what Matt did with that Zangor unit, as he said, was he formed like a big line and sort of boxed me in my deployment zone. And that meant that rather than moving, 10 inches out and then charging, I couldn't move at all. I had so little room to move that I ended up playing like Tetris with my models just so I could fall back out of combat. I ended up sort of like climbing a ruin a little bit and shuffling some models in a different direction just so I could leave combat and shoot the Zangors. It was actually really rough. And I think that when he got my Engineers unit as well, something that I can't help but notice looking back on it now was at the end of the game, Matt ended up winning by 4 points exactly. And losing that Engineer unit to turn one, I didn't get any of those secondary points. So that was a full 4 points that I could not have achieved, and not that I would have, but I could not have achieved, and I lost by 4 points. So my turn one was pretty much just countering that Zangor unit. I shot it, I charged it. I can't remember if I cleared it all up, Matt, but I killed the majority of it.
You killed them dead, man.
Yeah,
they died a horrible death.
So I cleaned them up, but the problem then was even after I'd charged, I was very compacted. So if you imagine, my army's 130 models-ish minus the 40 that Matt killed, still I've got about, 100 models roughly compacted in a very small portion of the board. And that's when Matt had his turn two.
It was the bloodletter bombs now that did the work.
Yes, absolutely. Liam and I actually discussed this. I sort of potentially may have misplayed the exact nuances of my second turn, but I'll run through what we did first. So the plague bearers moved a little bit further, put me in smite range with a few different units so I could actually start picking away at them. Oh, you missed the souped up clock attack gun, Liam?
Oh, yeah, no, it really got the time on there. What the shock attack gun did was, so one gimmick that I've loved about my army for a long time is the shock attack gun to shoot characters. It's in ETC, it's very strong because it can jump across and kill a key character in an army, and then it's always a net gain. But what Matt identified before the game was that I would want to use the shock attack gun to kill Ahriman and maybe another character or even two more if I could. Because of that, he realized that I would likely sacrifice my shock attack gun to do that. So he put Kingslayer on my shock attack gun. It only got him 3 points, not four, but doing that meant that I gave up a lot of points for not really anything. And because I really wanted to do it, I did it anyway. It was successful. I used the shock attack gun to kill Ahriman, which I think it did help me, but it didn't help me enough. And, you know, Ahriman's time really ran out, and the shock attack gun did kill him.
How many mortal wounds did you do, Liam?
Zero. I actually did not roll... I did not roll strength 11 or 12 all weekend.
What didn't dice happen. Were you using, dude?
I was using the trusty Godhammer dice that they don't like ITC format, man. They just don't.
You would have done mortal wounds if you were using the Godhammer dice.
Dude, it's science. They just don't like ITC. It's fine. Matt, back to you.
Sure. So we moved some plague bearers up. We deep struck in a unit of bloodletters, 9 off of the Meganobs that had come out to fight the Zangor. So Liam had sort of let me get a pretty good charge there, but obviously had to do it to kill the Zangors. If he hadn't done it, I probably would have spent 2 severe to keep them alive, and it would have really been a bit of a disastrous turn if he didn't get killer units. So I dropped those bloodletters in there. I dropped my horrors in Liam's backfield near his second engineer's unit. So basically they dropped down next to those grots, and they very quickly shot those grots off the board. At that point, taking both Liam's engineer's units off the board was a pretty big swing in my favour there. The second unit of bloodletters dropped in off the tank busters. I think this was probably a mistake, but I did it anyway, because yeet. And I threw a few smites out, made my two charges, the bloodletters into the Meganobs, the bloodletters into the tank busters as well. Liam shot off his bomb squigs in an attempt to make my charge really big, but the bloodletters roll a 13 or something as they do.
Sad.
Every now and then, +1 to charge, which feels pretty good.
Sad.
They fought on the Meganobs first, and I killed, I believe, 8. Liam interrupted and sort of killed half the unit with the tank busters, and then they fought back and fought twice and took the tank busters off the board as well. And then my unit of bloodletters lost 3 to the remaining 2 Meganobs and rolled a 1 on their morale and got those 3 guys back. So that was a pretty good turn for me again. I managed to get Kilmore at the end of the turn again because I'd removed a couple of units. I'd taken Liam's engineers out. I killed most of the Meganobs, so I was feeling pretty good about it at this point. Obviously, I smited out the shock attack gun as well, who shot back and sort of half killed the Khorne Prince. But luckily, I didn't kill him. Good.
The unfortunate thing there, and I actually made this mistake, was something that I've clarified before was when the shock attack gun dies, of course, it can shoot. It's got the orc strat, orcs is never beaten. And then the dreadwar strat, allowing you to shoot twice, only specifies you have to use that stratagem in the shooting phase. So if you kill the shock attack gun in your opponent's, if your shock attack gun is killed in your opponent's shooting phase, you can choose to shoot it and then you can actually shoot it again. So when you kill your opponent's shock attack gun, please be aware that it can shoot when it dies and fire twice. That is actually an interaction that exists and is quite scary. Unfortunately, Matt killed me in the psychic phase, and I was looking really chuffed, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to shoot him twice. And then Matt told me that, yeah, I was just being a... So that was my bad.
You should have killed him with the old warp bolters, man. That would have been funny.
Warp bolters are illegal on Thousand Suns Princes, mate.
Oh, really?
Look, but you know what? I think if you just took a third unit of Zangor, it would be a problem. but we'll just leave that alone.
Yeah, so, look, if I take 20 points up, I'd feel pretty chuffed with myself.
Your time's up, Matt. It's my time to talk. All right. Clock attack guns away. So, my... God damn it.
Clock attack gun. Oh, that's it.
No, you actually missed it. Matt said that about 10 minutes ago. He actually said clock attack gun twice, and like you guys didn't.
I bet the souped up clocker.
The souped up clock.
Oh, yeah,
I heard it.
All right, good. So that's the context. Anyway, clock memes aside, my turn. I think this was my turn too. It sort of registered in my brain. It probably should have a turn before that. This game was going quite badly. So I needed to sort of try and shift this game a little bit. And one thing that I like about my Orc army is that it has the ability to do that. So I did a bit of a riskier play, which I think it helped me quite a lot. Didn't end up winning me the game, obviously, but it did help. I had my unit of 10 Meganobs, and I de-jumped them out of this cluster that had become the middle of the board, and I moved them off to my right-hand side of the table. Now, on that side of the table, Matt had deep struck his Pink Horrors that he said to kill my Gretchen, and he also had a unit of cultists on his objective. So by de-jumping my Meganobs across, I stole an objective from Matt and re-secured my own objective, and doing that gave me hold more for not just that turn, but I think it gave me hold more for the next turn as well. And it sort of allowed me to keep playing the game a little bit when I was already giving up kill more and I was bleeding secondaries like nothing else. Other than that, I didn't really do too much else. As Matt and I mentioned before, one of the big problems for me in this game was the terrain allowed him to hide pretty much all of his infantry without much effort. So in the middle of the table, there was like a shield generator thing, like a square that was roughly the height of a tall character. And he had his Plague Bearer unit very comfortably standing behind it. And then his characters were only like an inch behind that again. Now, where he was able to keep smiting me and keep hitting me with psychic powers without really giving a crap about my shooting in return because I couldn't see any of his models. So this is where the game sort of started getting... the outcome of the game kind of got a little bit secured here because I stopped being able to interact with Matt very effectively. What happened after that, Matt?
I think the only real relevant point of discussion here is probably your choice to charge the looters into the pub letters.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a mistake. So Matt had, as he said, brought both of his bloodletter units in. And I didn't Mordaka them, but I shot the looters and then I shot them again. And with double shooting looters, how many bloodletters did I kill?
I think it was 9. It was something ridiculous like that.
So
not very many.
And that very realistically, that should pick up the entirety, if not the overwhelming majority of a bloodletter unit. So I was a little bit, I admit, I was probably a little bit tilted by that, I guess. And I was sort of like, I have to kill these bloodletters. They have to go away. So I ended up charging my looters in as well. Now, at the time, I thought this was a good move because I thought it would allow me to move my looters into the ruin they were next to and therefore stop Matt from smiting them. What it actually accomplished was it allowed him to kill my looters even faster than he would otherwise have been able to do by just hitting them to death with blood. So it kind of just sucked even more than it already.
Well, I actually ended up fighting twice with the remaining 4 guys and killing an extra 6 looters.
It was pretty bad. It was
actually
bad.
Pretty efficient, so, but I'm surprised the looters didn't actually do more because...
Me too. Yep.
They actually have 2 attacks each, man.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, trust me, I'm well aware. That sucked.
I rolled very, very hot that turn, to be fair. But yes, I think he killed 7, he got me down to 4. The bloodletters hit him once, then hit him again, and then they rolled the second one for morale, the same unit, 2 turns in a row, and got 4 more guys back, which was pretty cool.
I think my exact words were, fuck you, Matt. Were actually what I said, because that sucked.
I thought it might have been, can you fucking not?
Oh, yeah, that sounds more like something I'd say. was this before or after table 8?
What's that, sorry?
Was this before or after I threw a dice at you nearly knocked the whole table over?
I think that might have been when I smited the other clock attack gun.
Jeez. So you can actually see it on the stream. I have gone back and watched it. It's quite funny. So I forget exactly what happened. I don't think it was. It wasn't even anything of import. But I had one of Matt's dice, and I threw it at him. I'm not gonna. And you know, Matt and I are mates, so I wasn't trying to like assault him with the dice. But Matt's a big dude. Like he's not a small. And his reaction to this dice flying at him was to fully freak the fuck out. You did. You completely. You like your arms went up to defend yourself, like you were about to be. And you ended up knocking the table, and like the terrain fell over, and these models fucking went everywhere. It was actually just hilarious. We ended up just laughing so much; it was very funny. But it kind of looks like we were having a fight. Not gonna lie.
See, I have the same reaction really? When you shoot me with the shock attack gun, Liam.
Just in general, you just rather flip the table.
Yeah, no, I flinch and I accidentally flip the table. Yeah.
Oh damn! You rolled snake eyes for your string.
Oh, there's three repulses, huh? You can only shoot twice, but three are dead somehow.
Dude, they actually both exploded and somehow did the 60.
That actually happened the other day, but that's another story.
Oh god. So after we destroyed the table and Matt had destroyed my army, the last couple of turns of the games were going through the motions a little bit. So
what, you're in a breakup?
Yeah, we actually went to go get Warhammer counseling, but it didn't go well, and we ended up breaking up. So we, Matt moved. Pretty much the only thing of note after my looters died was the Meganobs jumped back. Sorry, Matt moved his Corn Demon Prince up to take me off my objective by slaughtering some Gretchen, and the Corn Lumberjack Demon Prince did not kill 6 Gretchen. He killed 5 of them, and I auto-passed morale to keep that one Gretchen around, keeping me that objective. Corn Demon Prince did definitely not pull some weight. He then got cleaned up.
Yeah.
He then got cleaned up by the last clock attack gun, as Matt will say. And then you Ooh.
Yeah, sorry, you're missing how the third clock attack gun came to pass away, Liam.
Did it?
The Zench Demon Prince, who was the warlord with Zench's Firestorm, took one the shock attack gun and rolled 5 out of 9 sixes and removed him from the board.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, so look, Matt is, despite the fact that I make jokes about it, Matt is trying to paint a picture here that he rolled nothing but crazy dice. The examples he's giving are, yes, he rolled very hot in specific turns, but there were other times where he had to do 10 4-ups and failed 8 of them. So I think he's trying to paint the picture like he got really lucky, but he's being a bit of a humble dude. He deserved to win that game fair and square.
I definitely got the better of it, but you're right. It was by no means, all crazy dice contributing to that. But I thought it was worth an honorable mention. It is pretty cool when you get a power go off like that and just picks up another character.
That was, I actually think, being the excellently bad sport that I can be in these situations, I think my response, fuck it, Matt, I'm going to roll your dice. And then I picked up Matt's dice and I rolled really bad. And that I deserve that. That's fair. So, pretty much. So after that, I think it was the final turn of the game, I tried to get some points back by jumping my Mega Knobs across, like back to the left-hand side to try and fight some of his Plague Bearers and characters. Unfortunately, they didn't make their charge last turn, and by that point, Matt was up by more points than I would have gotten anyway had I made that charge. And we ended the game, naturally, bottom of turn 6, 28-24 to Matt.
Oof. Yeah, I noticed at the end of the stream the engineer's points. I was like, oh, that's a big secondaries loss.
Yeah, so I had a bit of time to obviously reflect on it. And I think engineers against Matt was a bad choice for me to begin with. I think, but also by the same token, I think Headhunters is actually harder for me to get as well, because Matt's army really relies on those characters. He's not really going to let me have any of them, so to speak. So I think I made some poor choices with regards to secondary points. But equally, there aren't really any good secondary choices against Matt. Whereas my army, to be perfectly honest, kind of It's a little bit of a problem with my list in ITC.
Yeah, you give it Reaper pretty easy. I mean, there's Gresham, you just look at him, and then there's Reaper.
Yeah, it's not just that. Like, a lot of people will just go, you know, Reaper, Butcher's Bill, and Gangbusters, and then you can all 12 of your secondaries by killing 8 Meganobs, so not even a full unit, and 80 Gretchen. So you actually get 12 secondaries from me by killing like 450 points of my army, which is just upsetting. Like, I can basically table you and you get all your secondaries anyway, and I haven't even lost a quarter of my army. It's a bit silly.
So, Matt, for you, looking back on the game, anything different you would have done?
Look, I probably wouldn't have charged two units of Bloodletters in the same turn. I probably would have let Liam have the Tank Busters for one more turn. I got a bit tunnel visioned when I thought he'd let me have them. I didn't think he was going to get another chance to get in there and punch on with them that early in the game. But if I'd held them off for one more turn, firstly, Liam couldn't have jumped the Mega Knobs over the other half of the board because the Bloodletters just come in and kill them. So that's probably the biggest one, biggest thing I'd change.
How come you were so keen for the Tank Busters? Because really, like, are they that big of a threat for your army?
It was about killing one of the shooting threats early, because if I killed the looters, the Tank Busters will actually still do work to the Plague Bearers if you don't have 4 CP into them, and Liam still had plenty of CP at that point in time. But they don't have as many shots, obviously, but they win on twos. They have, you know, a bunch of shots. They don't care about my negative 2 to hit. They force me to warp surge pretty much if he has a clear shot on them. And also, if he gets lucky and he rolls damage through that Plague Bearer screen and my characters get opened up, I don't want those Tank Busters around.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point.
But, yeah, I probably could have let him hold on to them for one more turn and kept the Bloodletters up in the sky. I think that would have been a slightly more optimal decision to make.
Yeah. I agree, and I think that once everything was down on turn 2, I think I actually said out loud, okay, so everything's on the table now. And it sort of allowed me to plan a little bit more easily. And I think that if you kept that unit off, you would have really forced me to keep playing defensively, and I would have lost by an even greater margin.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of the real power to this version of the Chaos list is the constant threat and the constant pressure. And if I drop everything on turn 2, that pressure lasts 2 turns and it's gone.
Yeah. No, that's... And this is really good, because even though there aren't many Orc armies like mine, if you do play against an army that you are not great against but play on a dense table, some of the things you practiced in this game, some of the things you would have improved upon, will help you at ETC, which is going
to
be good.
100%. Absolutely, yeah. I think it probably goes to show you the tables that you do and don't want to play Demons on. Because we played on Planet Bowling Ball this game, and it's much, much differently.
Yeah, exactly. And despite the fact that that was something that has been in the back of my mind for a couple of days now, my game against Matt was also very useful for me in a different way. So it taught me that, yes, I do not want to play against Demons on a dense table. It is very, very bad, and I do not want to experience that again. It is bad, and I feel bad. But on the same token, it also let me think a little bit more about how I need to deploy and how I can use bad terrain to my advantage. So Hayden Waldock, a Queensland player who plays Demons, has kindly gone back and watched mine and Matt's game and has spoken to me quite a lot, actually, about that game and how to improve on it. One thing that I knew I had to do, but for some reason I didn't do, was when I'm deploying my Gretchen, you should deploy them 3 inches apart so that a unit that comes down 9 inches away from the first rank cannot declare a charge on the second rank. That stops you losing the 40 to 50 Gretchen that I did in the first turn. It stops you losing that to a unit. I actually started, if you watch the stream and watch my deployment, I started deploying like that. And then for some reason I got a bit distracted. I don't really know. I don't have a good answer. I sort of potatoed a little bit there.
I think you ran out of room, man. I think with the Mega Knobs, the looters, and the Tank Busters, I think you actually ran out of room in the castle. And I deploy, you deploy, you sort of locked yourself into that corner of the board. And at that point, you couldn't actually shuffle. You sort of, you were just locked into losing an extra, you know, extra squad of grass.
Exactly. And I think the, one thing that I definitely think mattered in that game was I have 100% gotten used to you deploy, I deploy, or I deploy, you deploy, because that's what ETC is. That's what you and I are practicing the most. And because of that, when I sort of had to visualize how my whole army deployed in a very small area, I kind of stuffed it up. And as Matt said, I deployed in such a way that if he made that, that Zangor charge, he got more than one unit of Gretchen. And that, that actually, or sorry, more than he should have anyway. And that, that really hurt me. But the other thing that I can do much, much better is if you look at the table mat, you know those the big crates that I ended up... So I ended up choosing a deployment side based on some really big crates that were massive line of sight blocking. In front of those crates, there was kind of a bit of like a death alley. And one thing that Hayden Waldock suggested was even though I needed to deploy defensively, I should have deployed on the right-hand side of the deployment map because that was sort of looking down that death alley, so to speak. And it meant that even though it was the dense table, I was operating in the most open part of that table, which would have made you moving your plague bearers towards me a little bit more difficult, which I think is something that I will reflect on.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. But look, the only thing I can say at the end is I've actually never played Matt Morazzoli before, and I actually really enjoyed that game. I think that one awesome thing about that game was it was very, very tense. Obviously, we're playing for the win, and I was very stressed out during that game. But the good thing about it was that everything in that game was played to intent, I personally think. It was a very transparent game, and I think the win went to who it deserved to go to. I think Matt played a really good game of 40K. He used everything he had to use to win that game. And 28-24, result speaks for itself.
I really enjoyed that game, man. It was definitely the highlight game of the weekend.
And all I can say is I'm very thankful Matt's on my side when we go over to ETC. I don't want to play against that again.
I agree. I don't want to play yours again.
next time we should play on an open table.
So yeah, congrats on that. Just wanted to say congrats on that win on at WinterCon. Jordan, did you have any questions you wanted to ask about to Matt?
No, I think I had a look at Matt's list earlier. Obviously, after listening to the story, you can kind of how the list was played over the weekend. It's good to see still the variety of lists that are out at the moment, but no questions really.
Yeah, I actually really like that that Demons list. I think who is it? Is it Dean Sinnebeck? He played like a similar style list at last year's ATC. Was it last year's ATC?
He played 80 Bloodletters that year, I think.
Oh, okay.
He didn't have any of the Thousand Sons. I actually had the Thousand Sons and Death Guard. I had the Zangors that I was buffing with Fabius Guile that year. But Dean played just Bloodletter Bombs and a Plague Bearer Brick that year.
Wait, didn't he play you, Liam, and you guys had like the same style list or something?
Well, I was playing Thousand Sons and Renegade Knights. 225 points. Thank you very much. Look, if you're going to talk smack to the highest amount. Anyway, so I played Dean last year, and I thought it was a really, really cool army. That was a bit of a lamer, I guess, outcome to a game because we were playing the Relic. So the Relic was worth a massive amount of points. I think it was worth 7 points or something. So it was very, very big. And I was up by about 4 or 5 points. I had the Relic. And very last turn of the game, Dean made an 11-inch charge and unfortunately stole the Relic from me with that 11-inch charge.
What a beast.
It was a bit lame simply because, you know, in my head, I was like, oh, you know, you probably shouldn't make the 11-inch charge, but those sort of things are going to happen.
Should have had your repulsor, mate. Told you.
Oh, I should have taken the repulsor.
Just as final wrapping up, what's next for you two guys, Matt? What's next for you before? I'm guessing ETC, but
yeah, I'm meeting Liam in the Middle East in 2 weeks.
the next I see Matt Morazzoli holding our clocks in Abu Dhabi.
We'll be just synchronizing our watches, synchronizing our chess clock.
Certainly, and Jesus Christ, these jokes are getting out of hand, man.
Liam actually hasn't heard the news, but I'm going to the Overwatch team tournament in November with a few of the Queensland guys.
Heard the news.
Oh, Rory has been going on about it, hasn't he?
Even I've heard about it.
Our team name is Big Ben and the Chesslock Boys.
Oh, no way.
All right, you know what? You know what? I'm changing my team name to Clockstoppers, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Dude, that's... You should grudge match round one.
No, I'm not doing that.
Let's see who's top of the clock, man. Let's do it.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway.
Otherwise, I'm actually running ISKCON at the end of August. So after I get back from Serbia, it's one of the biggest Victorian events. So I'm doing that with my lovely partner, Chelsea, and a few other friends of the gaming group. And we've got,
when's that, Matt?
It's the 24th and 25th of August at House of War in Ringwood in Victoria.
Isn't that like the week after we get back from ETC?
I come back straight away. Oh, no, you come back on the same flight as me, or the same time as me. We get back fly out on the 12th, back on the 13th.
So 2 weeks. So it's like 2 weeks. All right. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm gonna tee most of it up, you know, before I leave. We should get about 80 players to that. So I'll be putting on the TO hat for a little while. And then there'll just be a few more GTs throughout the year before I head over to Vegas for LVO.
Whoop.
Yeah, and you get one of your games streamed as part of that deal, don't you? Like the
supposed to. Fingers crossed.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
They did say to me that they promised it, but it's one of those things that it just might not happen. So we'll see what happens. I'd like to get a game on stream. I think it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Win the event. So win the event, you can have all your games on stream.
Yeah.
Easy.
That's it. Well, I'm building Liam's list for it, so we'll see how we go.
Perfect.
All right.
Oh, you've converted him. But anyway, with that...
No comment.
Any final notes, boys? Anything else you'd like to say?
No. Matt, thanks for taking the time to come on.
Oh, thank you for having me, guys. Been an enjoyable little recap here.
I'm glad you found time on your clock to come on. It's really good.
Oh, I was waiting for it too. Yeah. I was fucking waiting for it.
You can just clock off now, man.
Oh, look, I'm taking it out. It, jokes aside about clocks, it's actually pretty late and I want to go to bed.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll
already been clock-blocked by this podcast, so.
Oh, I'm going to sign it off before this gets out of hand. So, Matt, thank you for... thank you for coming on. Thanks for the narrative of a game we got for the last one. There was good back and forth going on. You guys recollect the game pretty well, so it sounds like you guys have been thinking about it non-stop.
I had time.
Anyway, so just to sign off, let us know what you think of the podcast. Leave us a review on iTunes. Give us your feedback on Facebook. Send us a message. Let us know what you like and didn't like. And we shall see you next time. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. See you later, guys. Turn it up, let it start.